Before we get into the podcast proper, this is just a quick note to acknowledge the Black Lives Matter movement.
And to acknowledge the brave individuals currently protesting around the world, particularly in light of such difficult circumstances.
You have our full support. Hello and welcome to Burn the Witch,
a podcast that explores the way history is used and abused today.
In this podcast, we're going to share with you some of our favourite things that are circulating the world of history at the moment.
And share our thoughts on how history can be made more accessible to everybody.
Women sharing thoughts?
Never. Burn the witches. I'm Helen Carr, historian, writer and documentary producer.
And I'm Rebecca Radil, historian, author and podcaster.
Rebecca, what have you been up to in lockdown?
I reckon I've been up to pretty much the same as you. Writing or trying to write, trying to homeschool, trying to stop myself going mad and with boredom and keeping tabs on all the elderly family members at the same time. Yeah, that's pretty much it. How about you?
Yeah, same. I found the writing quite difficult, even though it feels like it should be the optimum time, but also just exhausting. I mean, having your family around full time is amazing, but it's also absolutely knackering. My daughter's sort of running around like a mad toddler, which she is a mad toddler. But so that's quite cute. So that's quite hard work. But otherwise, I've been enjoying the time to think on things a lot more, though. That has been one positive. And something else as well. I mean, I've really liked some of the TV that has been coming out of lockdown. I have deviated, of course, from the history, but that's not what I'm going to talk about today. The BBC have been putting out some really cool stuff, actually, from their archive. And one that I discovered that another... I don't know if this is a new series or whether it was a series that was released in 2018. I think it was originally released in 2018, but I've only just discovered it. And it is called Monkman and Seagull's Genius Adventures. So this is basically Monkman and Seagull. So they were two...
They were on University Challenge.
Yes, they were two contestants on University Challenge. And they actually met on University Challenge in 2017. And it's a series where they basically travel around Britain retracing the Industrial Revolution. And they drive around in this blue Mini. And I just really like them as a pair. And I like the concept. And they're so entertaining. And I like that they take the history seriously, though, and they do inject like a genuine passion into each subject. And the journalist Rachel Cook wrote for New Statesman about this. She reviewed it, and I just wanted to read this one bit because I think this sort of really nailed it.
Go on then.
Monkman, who is from Ontario, and Seagull, who's from Newham, met when they each captained teams on University Challenge in 2017. Since then, alongside academic careers, they've parlayed their famously cheery nerdishness into a nice little line in radio and TV. As a double act, they bring to mind Morecambe and Wise. They're somewhat less funny. Their manners, like their clothes, are quaint, which makes them seem older than they are. Both are in their 30s. But they're weirdly juvenile. Which would you rather fight? Seagull asked Monkman as they drove their blue Mini down the country lane. 100 duck-sized horses or one horse-sized duck? Monkman took the question very seriously, not even allowing himself to be distracted by the Haribo in the glove compartment. One horse-sized duck, he said finally, after a period spent gazing at the horizon.
Oh my god. I need to watch this.
It's brilliant. And they do dress up, so there is this element of the sort of Lucy Worsley documentary about it. But they also quite seriously look at the development of the Industrial Revolution in the Victorian period. They visit cotton mills and they look how the steam engine grew. And they also sort of look at developments like the hot air balloon, as well as Charles Darwin and how the theory of Darwinism sort of took root. So I think it's really fun and it's very, very BBC Two, but it's a really nice sort of light way of looking at history. And it's narrated by Simon Callow, which is always brilliant.
Well, he has literally got the best voice, hasn't he? I think him and Brian Blessed, I think they need to have that kind of like narration off, don't they? And see who can do better because I think, yeah, if I ever had anything made about my life, I'd like them to be the narrators.
Yeah.
Together. They can like take it in turns, one sentence each. And it's just like, it'll just get increasingly louder and louder, I reckon. When they're doing their like theatre voices.
Well, this is quite theatrical, and that's what I quite like about it. But it is accessible and it's fun, and I just think as a duo they work really well.
Yeah.
And I really like the fact that they met on University Challenge. Did you watch them on that?
I don't think I did. I think I just saw like the aftermath, because they came kind of like cult hits, didn't they? But I don't think I actually saw them on the programme. But I do remember their faces, because I think, is it Monkman that's got the very serious face?
Yeah.
He wears glasses. He does look like he's angry with you, but I think that's his natural facial expression, isn't it?
Yeah.
But they, yeah.
Well, this is, I think they're brilliant on this. And I think it's really innovative. And I don't think that there's actually been anything that BBC have done on the Industrial Revolution that's quite as lighthearted. And I think it works really well, especially in lockdown at the moment. I think it's a really nice re-release.
Well, talking about Industrial Revolution and things that were on TV. Now, I don't know. I have to, be honest here. I don't know if this actually exists. But like you, Helen, and probably more so, I'm a massive Twitter fiend, so I'm always on it and I'm always following people. And one of the people I follow is the creator of Endeavour, the ITV series about early Inspector Morse. And he tweeted something yesterday about a new series called Chris Tarrant's Extreme Railway Journeys. And he's joked here that what's next? Like, are we going to have like near-death ballooning? And I thought, well, maybe like, Michael Portillo doing real Russian roulette or something. But it's like, there's a certain type of programme, isn't there, on TV where they literally just get an older, in the politest possible way, gentleman that has a certain type of accent doing something about railways and being really, really non-PC about it. And it is, I really don't like these programmes at all. And I wish they'd just get rid of them and do something else. But it's just, it's hilarious, like the depths that they go to try and make something work. It reminds me of that Alan Partridge thing.
Oh, God, I remember that.
Was it?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Youth hustling with Chris Eubank or whatever it was. But I reckon on the TV front, we cannot speak. Well, we need to talk about one more factual programme first, I think, before we get onto the big the big show that we're both obsessed with. David Olashoga's got his latest series of A House Through Time that's on at the moment, and I think we're two episodes in. And I sat down the other night ready to watch it. I'd got myself a nice glass of wine. I'd made sure that Sam, my husband, was aware that I was watching something on our big telly, and I sat down and I realised it was the wrong day. Now, any other time that would be fine, but because it's like lockdown, there's like, you look forward to small things. But anyway, I watched it the day after, the second episode, and it's so good, isn't it?
I've actually not seen it yet. I really need to. I've not. And I'm actually, I've been kind of watching all of the stuff that's not history, which I've just finished. But that is on my list. That is on my list to watch.
You should. Can I give you some reasons?
Yes.
It's really well made. So I'm not actually sure it's 2020. But usually it's the type of programme that you'd imagine the makers of Who Do You Think You Are and Long Lost Family making, which is a company called Wall to Wall. But it's that same kind of feeling, and it does what it says on the tin. So he selects one house in a city with a particularly idiosyncratic history and traces the life of that house through the people that have lived there. And it's fascinating. The last episode was quite moving, because there were a few, and I won't give anything away, because I do think if anybody is ever listening to this pilot episode of our podcast, they they should catch up with it. But it's just really well made, and I love the way that David Olashoga acknowledges the fact that, it's a team effort doing the research. He's always saying, we found this in the archives, we discovered this. It's never me, I. And I think it's a nice way of doing it.
Because he did it with, because I know they produced a book for the series, he and Melanie Back-Canson. Because I did a podcast with Mel about a year ago almost.
Yeah.
She actually came to my house and we talked about the history of my house,
which was great. Oh, okay.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot. but it was really fun. And I do love the concept of it. And it, again, anything that makes history relatable to people and sparks that initial interest, whether it's ancestral history, but your house history, I think that's brilliant. Just the idea of the people who have come before you and how those walls, those four walls, have contained their lives and what we can learn from that. I think it's amazing. And there are probably, I can imagine there are so many sort of little clues. It's quite just sort of detective-y, isn't it? There's so many little clues in one's house to kind of tell you about its past.
So just one final thing on the TV front. We are going to talk about something a bit later on, but I noticed today that the BAFTA television nominations have come out, and I find it interesting that the two shows that are leading the nominations are Chernobyl or Chernobyl. Mm. I always get it wrong. That's got 14 nominations, and The Crown has got 7 as well. So people are still loving history, aren't they?
Yeah.
20th century history, but they're still loving it.
Yeah, there's been a real push, actually, for 20th century history kind of in telly world. I think people are looking for that short but exciting story that you can spread out into a long series or a long documentary that really kind of analyses things from a very forensic perspective.
Yeah. I think you're right. And also in lockdown, I mean, let's be honest, it's easier to make programmes about 20th century history because you can access all the archive footage, whereas anything before that, it's really difficult to make something visual,
isn't it,
before that point.
Absolutely. And also you have, if you want to look at something in intense detail, you've got so much more material at your fingertips if you're looking at 20th century history. That's why nothing from the Middle Ages is going to get commissioned.
I know. I think I'll be waiting a long while to have a plague drama now. I think people have lost their appetite for it.
We'll make one day. Other than telly, I'm not on Twitter all that much. I really need to get better at that. I'm a bit of a granny when it comes to Twitter. But one thing that I did find, which I really loved, is this hashtag Museums Unlocked. I don't know if you've heard of it, but it's run by Professor Dan Hicks, who's Professor of Contemporary Archaeology at Oxford Union. He's a curator at Pitt Rivers. And he basically set this up in lockdown to try and help sort of reevaluate the way museums share their collections. And he puts it really well. And I actually think this could you know, move forward beyond lockdown when museums reopen, because he argues that it forms like a multiversal museum rather than, you know, having collections held within this handful of metropolitan institutions. So it allows everybody to access sort of our collective cultural heritage. So the idea is that hashtag Museums Unlocked encourages visitors and museums to share a photograph or a memory or information about part of their collection every day. So anyone in the world can actually access it, which I think is really nice. And I want to talk about this today because it ends on the 9th of July. But it's all on his Twitter page. So if you search hashtag Museums Unlocked, all of the information's on there.
Oh, well, that does sound really interesting. There's another guy doing some amazing museum stuff as well. I forget whether it's called Museums at Home or Museums from Home, but he's called Dan Vo, and he leads, actually they're award-winning LGBTQ museum tours normally, and he does them at the V&A and somewhere else. I think it might be Cambridge, but I could be wrong. But he does, anyway, he organises these amazing tours, but he's been doing these short videos from his home while we've been in lockdown, just interviewing people about their favourite objects and what they like and love about museums and stuff like that. And it's just, the videos are really, they're just really nice. And I think it's good to help build a sense of community, particularly for people that have been perhaps in lockdown on their own. So it's a, you know, there's another nice series of videos to see there. But have you been doing any of the like virtual museum tours and stuff, Helen?
No, I haven't. But one thing that I have been wanting to, and I actually only really now have the time to start doing this, is talks. And that's something, as you quite rightly say, might be good for people who are in lockdown on their own. So the National Archives are doing some really great tours. Actually, a bunch of them have already sold out, and they've got another date on for one that was particularly popular, which is called Shut Up, Quarantine and Social Distancing During Tudor Epidemics.
Oh, right.
That looks really, really interesting. And that's on 17th of June at 11 a.m. for anyone who wants to sign up. That's like an additional date because it was so popular. And they've got a lovely one as well, which is Caribbean Connections, which is on the 19th of June. And that's all about researching and how you research Caribbean migration using and both obviously using the resources that the National Archives have, and they have so much online. I think it's just brilliant. It's a website that, to be honest, that you could just spend so much time on and watch all sorts of videos, and they've got some great content, so that's always worth looking into, actually, I think. And I need to do a bit more of that because, I mean, like you, I rely so heavily on the archives, the National Archives, and not being able to actually go there in person, I've definitely been kind of scouring their website a little bit harder than
usual.
Yeah,
it's hard, isn't it? I there are certain things I literally can't do at the moment. But yeah. Just going back to these virtual things, so I, like you, I've not really done many of the virtual tours, although I did watch the British Museum. Well, they had on their YouTube channel a programme that they'd made to tie in with their Pompeii exhibition that they had a few years ago, which weirdly was... Oh, this was so annoying at the time. So I had my honeymoon in 2013, just after my wedding, funnily enough. My husband and I went on a kind of road trip around southern France and Italy. And our aim was to get to Naples because that's where his family are from. We got to Naples or Napoli, and we also went to Pompeii and had a look around there. But Pompeii was obviously, it's amazing, and you go there to look, you know, walk down the streets and all of
that.
It's also
massive. I never realised how big it was.
It's huge. But they didn't have the objects and artefacts. It seemed to be kind of lacking. And I was thinking, what on earth? Like, why aren't these things here? And then when I got home afterwards, I found out that there was a blooming a big exhibition at the British Museum. So I'd gone all the way to Pompeii to see these amazing things, but they were in London the whole time. So that's on YouTube though, and it's really interesting. Bettany Hughes is doing it, and the other thing as well is the Globe. If you like theatre, they've got they're kind of rebroadcasting loads of their previous productions. I did go on there looking for the Nell Gwynn musical.
I love the Globe.
But it's not there. But it's really good. And also, sorry to push these two things in because they're not entirely history related. But Chester Zoo at the moment, which is my local zoo, but it's also the best zoo in the UK and one of the best in the whole world. And I know people have problems with the ethics of zoos, but it is a leader in conservation and protection. It's in trouble financially, but they've been doing so much during lockdown to engage children in virtual tours of the zoo and things. So if you fancy, you know, supporting it, you can do. I also did this murder mystery thing. Have you seen any of these like adverts going out, Helen?
No.
Like, oh my god. So it was like, so obviously I've always wanted to do a murder mystery tour or like a murder mystery dinner. Have you ever done one?
I did years and years ago when I was probably about 13 and my friend's mum served us WKD in cocktail glasses.
Was it good? Did you figure out who the killer was?
I think so. If we weren't underage drunk by that point, on sugar, which is mainly what WKD is comprised of, can I just point that out?
yeah, sugar and food colouring.
Yeah.
So I've always wanted to do one, and I still want to do a real one, but there was this thing advertised where you could do like a virtual Sherlock Holmes murder mystery, and I signed up to do it. It was only like a tenner, so my husband and me, we did it, and it was so rubbish.
That's so disappointing.
But in a really funny way. They had these actors and it was on Zoom and the actors were just like, the connection was really crap. So we were just kind of like trying to listen to what their testimony was. And then you were like sorted into smaller groups. And obviously there were people that were taking it really seriously and like hammering these actors with questions. And it was a mess. And the real murderer was, you would never have thought it. But anyway, yeah, so that's another thing that I've been doing.
I have been woeful at doing things online then. That's pretty bad. But going back to the Globe thing, I should point this out because I will genuinely forget to say it otherwise. When everything does open up again, I don't know if they're doing anything virtually, but have you ever been to the Sam Wanamaker Playhouse?
No, I've been to the other one. I've been to the main Globe bit, but I've not been to the Sam Wanamaker section.
So I had never knew about this. And I went a couple of years ago and it was amazing. You would love it. It's tiny, like really, really tiny. Imagine the Globe like minus by 20. It's teeny tiny, but it's got all of these really low hanging chandeliers with all candle, like long kind of pillar candles.
Yeah.
And it's just incredible. And I watched, what did I watch? I watched Marlowe play there and it was brilliant. So if you ever get a chance to go there, definitely look out for what's on. Because that I found way more atmospheric than the Globe actually.
Oh, right. Oh, because yeah, I love the Globe.
I saw Dr. Faustus.
Ah.
Dr. Faustus. Yeah, the Globe, you have to stand if you go to the Globe. You have to get a beer and you have to stand.
Yeah,
isn't it?
I do like that it's cheap. You can, I mean, you can pay a bit fiver more if you want to go in the stalls. You can get tickets for a fiver. And I think that's really good in London to see quality performance.
Yeah, definitely.
For a fiver. It just makes it really accessible. But with Dr. Faustus, was that the RSC production then, I'm assuming? No, it wouldn't have been if it was the Globe.
No, it was at the Globe. It was in the Sam Wanamaker Playhouse. But it was just so good, and it was so atmospheric, and it's definitely, it's not as well known as the Globe, and people don't kind of, you know, the Globe's got its history and its fame, and actually, but it is so worth going to see something there, because I think you'd really enjoy it. It's very gothic.
Oh, okay. Well, that's on my list now then. We have got a biggie, haven't we, to talk about?
Yeah.
Well, not a biggie,
oh,
but one that we're both obsessed with. Do you want to start?
The Last Kingdom. Oh. Did you know? I didn't know this. Having a little fact. It all began because Bernard Cornwall discovered he was descended from the Earl of Northumbria, Uhtred the Bold.
Oh, my God.
Can
That's
we
amazing.
Say, Uhtred of Bedenver, sadly, does not exist.
He does exist, Helen. I've seen him
Sorry.
On TV frequently, and we see a lot of him on TV. Right, we have to confess here, and this is bad. This is really bad, but I think if we confess it and we're upfront about it and we don't skirt around the issue, I don't think it's as bad. We objectify Uhtred of Bedenver.
Yes, but I think a lot of guys do as well, you know. I don't think it's just like a kind of, like, I don't think it's a purely heterosexual thing. I think there's a lot of sexiness going on with Uhtred. I think, like, my husband definitely, he can definitely understand.
He's horrible. Like, you would never actually want to be his wife, but he's just such a good character. And I love how charismatic he is and funny and, yeah, handsome and...
I know. He's sort
but,
of he's the classic bad boy, but he's also really good. So he's kind of like...
But we should say it is actually, like, ignore all of that, all of what I've just said and Helen's just said, because it is actually a really, really good show as well.
Yeah. It is, and I really think that the I think they've stayed true to history in many ways, and I love the way it's all portrayed, and I love the set, I love the costumes. I think that the characters are really, really good, and they've actually, I believe Uhtred is probably one of the only, I'm going to be pulled up on this, but one of the only fictional characters in it, actually. I think that, you know, Alfred was real, Ethelfled was real, Ethelred, Ethelrold.
All the Ethels are real.
They're all real, and all real characters. And, you know, Ethelfled, the Lady of Mercia, who was such a strong character, she did actually have a really proactive role in Mercia, and she did actually go to battle and succeed alongside her brother Edward. And actually, I didn't realise this, Alfred was apparently quite sick for most of his life, and it's thought now, like, historians think that he might have had Crohn's disease.
Oh, okay.
So I think that's portrayed quite well.
Do you know what I found hilarious, actually? This is a little bit of a tangent, but you know when they found Richard III in the car park? I was still working in TV then, like, full-time. And I remember everyone was like, right, which king can we find now? Who else is buried somewhere? And everyone went after Alfred the Great, and because we don't have a body for him, because he was buried in Winchester Cathedral.
I think so.
Then it's moved around a little bit since then. But they found these, like, two... that I'm going to be corrected, but they found these, like, two bones and tested them, and they were like, it could be him, could be his son, could be his nephew. And it's like, BBC made a whole documentary out of these, like, two tiny bones that they'd found just because Richard III had been such a hit. But anyway, that's a tangent, but we still don't know for sure where he is.
But he is a great character. He's a really interesting character, and it's especially because he wasn't actually in line originally to be king. It was only because his brothers before him had died that he was actually, I think he was actually quite far down the succession. I think he was like fifth.
But then it was like that, wasn't it then? Well, this is the thing. I don't know that much about that period. So this is why I really like the show, because I'm not watching it from the point of view of a historian. I'm just watching it because it's a really good drama, and it's, you know, the battles are great. As you said, the characters are fantastic as well. And
the script,
you know,
is brilliant.
Female characters are really good. Yes, yeah, script's really good.
Yeah.
Destiny is all.
I know. Terrible. I never actually called it The Last Kingdom. I would always say to my husband, do you want to watch Uhtred, Son of Uhtred tonight?
Yeah, but that's it, isn't it? It's Uhtred, son of Uhtred. You can't help but try and do the accent. Talking about accents, oh my God. So I think I text you, well, I did text you this. The Last Kingdom podcast. There is a podcast.
I know.
So this is the interesting thing. Like, I'm not going to give anything away. Let's be honest, there isn't that much to give away. It's just a conversational type thing with three of the lead gentlemen. I don't know why I'm saying gentlemen, to make it seem a little bit less like I'm being a total perv. But the podcast is really funny. But the Irish character in The Last Kingdom, the actor playing him isn't Irish. He's Scottish.
Why did they portray him as an Irishman then? That's interesting. Is that because...
I don't know.
Maybe that's because there was more Viking activity. I could be so wrong on this, but there was more Viking activity in Ireland at the time. And there was also, I mean, at this point, as you see in the fourth season, there's a skirmish with the Scots or the Picts, as they were at that point. So maybe that's why. I don't know, historically.
Yeah, maybe he needed to not be Scottish.
Or they were channeling a Braveheart vibe.
Yeah, maybe. So that's the first thing. But then Uhtred, the actor that plays him, Alexander Draiman, I think his name is. I think his name is. I know his name is that. he's German, but his accent isn't really anything like Uhtred's. He's got a slightly American accent. So, yeah.
I did hear, because you sent it to me and I listened to sort of the first 2 minutes before I was summoned by my dictator toddler. And you're right, it was really weird listening to his voice, because you could definitely tell it was him, but it was like, oh, I'm not used to that.
Yeah, exactly. So he obviously works really well on his accent. So not only is he very handsome, he's a man of many talents. Yes.
Whatever. Episode one, everyone. Episode one opens very well.
Yeah, do watch if you've not already. You will love it. You will. For many reasons.
Moving on, but kind of segueing very seamlessly, I do love the look of the men in The Last Kingdom, and that's something that I feel a lot of men at the moment in lockdown are trying to channel through the growth of beards. So this is a real sort of Viking look, and actually my husband's got one at the moment, and he says he's going for the Ragnar Lothbrok. And I wonder if men are going to go back to barbers at the end of this and being like, can you just trim me a bit more like Uhtred of Bevenbur? Or can you put some beads in that?
I think they should. I think they should.
So. I know. Because I think it's interesting because for the Vikings, apparently mostly did have beards. But actually, if they were warriors, they were always a bit shorter, which was practical, which, you know, it makes sense.
So hang on, they were shorter. Why is that practical?
Well, I guess they wouldn't get in the way of battle, would they, and tangle in your...
Well, for like ducking down and, well, they wouldn't need to duck down, would they, if they were shorter? But like...
I don't know. You're tangled in your axe.
We're going to have to... We'll have to figure this one out for next time. I don't think you've got enough information there, Helen.
But I did find...
It's a good fact, but it's not... You haven't got the depth.
I did find one of the sagas does go into men's hair. And this is definitely something I want to talk about later, because I don't know if you've watched this show, but I do love Vikings. It's brilliant. And this talks about King Harald of Norway, who's actually one of the main characters in Vikings.
Yeah.
And so I just wanted to read a little bit about the saga. So one well-known Viking saga deals with the hair of Harald, King of Norway, who is known as Fairhair. Harald wanted to court Gyda, daughter of a king in Hordaland. But she told his representative she would not wed a king who ruled such a small kingdom. Harald then resolved he would conquer all of Norway and announced he would not cut or even comb his hair until he attained that goal. His blonde hair grew quite long and people began calling him King Harald the Fairhair.
Oh.
So maybe the beards that are being grown in lockdown could have some kind of, I don't know, equal story.
We could just like name our men, like give them extra part, like
my husband would be
Sam the big beard or
the great bushy beard.
Yeah, I think this is an idea. But what about us? Like, what can we be? I can be Rebecca the Roots because terrible.
What can you be? Helen the Hermione Granger.
Yeah, that's it.
Because I actually have naturally really curly hair, and I've had to embrace it in lockdown. So it's looking quite wild.
All good historians have curly hair. I've noticed this. I don't know what it is. I don't, so I'm not claiming to be a good historian. But you have curly hair, then. Susanna Lipscomb has.
True. I'm going to worry I'm going to emerge from lockdown, though, and they'll be like, oh, yeah, okay, whatever. Just another historian with curly hair. It's like, no, it was there all along.
Yeah, I think you're just copying, aren't you?
But that is my silly little random fact. I'm going to leave my hair knowledge there.
Well, I think that's good. I've got one final thing to mention, which I meant to mention before. And it's about a story I saw in the news this week. And I just thought it was quite fun, but also annoying too. So some of Isaac Newton's papers are going to be auctioned. I can't remember which auction house is doing it. Not that it matters, because there's no way I'd be able to afford it. But the papers talk about plague remedies that he had been scribbling down on notes, you know, as notes on another document. And one of his remedies was to turn toad vomit into a lozenge and ingest that, which is, you know, delightful, but very, very 17th century. But it made me think about things that are in private collections and all the stuff that we don't know about, but's hidden away and, you know, could change the way we think about certain historical people or even events in history. And then it made me angry and it made me think people shouldn't own things privately. And then I got a bit communist about it all and thought that, you know, everything should be available to everyone. And why not? So, Helen, what are your thoughts on that, hey?
I feel quite strongly about that, actually. I used to work for a well-known, I'm not going to the name, but I used to work for a well-known auction house. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the things that I really struggled with, because I was fortunate enough to see some amazing art that went through private sale. And a lot of these private sales, I have to admit, they were acquisitions for museums. And I totally find that. Or they were bought privately and then they were given to a museum as a donation. That is brilliant. That for me is really philanthropic, and I think that that's a wonderful way to for somebody to share their wealth. However, I did see things go through to private ownership, and it made me really sad. And I found the fact that it was such a commodity really hard, and so I realised it wasn't really for me.
So yeah, well, I wonder what else is out there. But that's probably a bit of a downer to leave the podcast on. So tell me something funny, Helen. Tell me a funny story. Say some jokes.
I don't know, but I do. Okay, one thing I will say is, so this was our pilot episode of Burn the Witch. And the premise is that we are friends and we basically decided to make a podcast about things that we genuinely talk about.
Yes. But we talk about them in a better order and on, you know, we have fewer tangents, but still quite a few.
So we're hoping to release these bi-weekly. Don't hold us to it, but that's what we are hoping to do. And they're going to be split initially on my podcast, Hidden Histories, and your podcast,
Killing Time.
And we'll see where it goes from there. But if people do want to hear anything or want us to discuss something in particular, we're always open to suggestions.
Mm-hmm. Just badger us on social media.
Yeah,
I'm exactly. At Rebecca Radil, and Helen, what's your handle? You don't know who you are.
I'm not used to this. I'm at Helen H. Carr.
Original.
Aren't
good.
I think I am. I'm at Helen H. Carr. But we hope that everybody has enjoyed this, and I'll come back with a joke next time. Don't put me on the spot like that. I'm really bad at jokes. I know, actually, I can do one.
Go on then. Where it has to be funny.
Where do you weigh whales?
I don't know.
A whaleway station.
Oh, good God. Yes, you can tell that you're a mother to a toddler. Anyway, thank you for listening, everyone.
Thank you for listening, and see you in a couple of weeks.